Blog Talk Radio.
And if it is Sunday night, it is wrestling night in America. I'm not Greg Parks. I'm filling in for Greg Parks. I'm Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, and I am also one of the co-hosts of PW Torch's PWT Talks NXT right here on the Daily Cast. And here with me to talk some wrestling with all of you guys is the good Dr. Kevin Catani. Kevin, thank you very much for sitting in and hanging out with us tonight.
Listen, I am so excited to be a part of this. Enjoying summer here, and so what better thing to do on a Sunday night than talk wrestling? Let's do it.
Exactly. Let's do it. It's a beautiful, beautiful sunny day here in good old New England, so I'm fun in the sun, and now let's talk some wrestling. So full disclosure here. So Greg unfortunately was not able to be here tonight. Kind of last minute asked me to host. I have not been able to catch up on like the G1 or Death Before Dishonor. I know Kevin kind of in the same boat as I am. So we could certainly try to answer questions, kind of have a little bit of a conversation discussion around that stuff. Your main run, like WWE, NXT, things like that, that's kind of more our wheelhouse here. But we know enough wrestling where we can probably talk some shop anyway. So before we get into the callers and get into the caller queue and kind of get things kicked off here, I'm going to read an email from Brian Alston. This is actually sent into PWT Talks NXT, and it came in a little after we had finished recording. So I'm going to read it here tonight. Why not? Brian says, reading Doc Bruce's recap of NXT, Ivy Nile removed the Diamond Mine flag. Diamond Mine started off hot with a lot of promise. And then it fizzled out in the end. The Wikipedia list of members with their join and left dates below, and he actually lists everybody out. Tyler Rust, Hachiman, Malcolm Bivens, Roderick Strong, Brutus Creed, Julius Creed, Ivy Nile, Damon Kemp, Tata Paxley, and listed out all of the dates there as well. I'm not gonna read out every single date here, but that's kind of a crazy list of people in and out of a faction. So his questions were, what were your initial thoughts of Diamond Mine and the first four members of Strong, Rust, Hachiman, and Bivens? And if Ivy Nile were to rebuild Diamond Mine, name one NXT male and one NXT female wrestler that should join. And in the future, do you think Diamond Mine could be looked at as a good stable? So Kevin, let me throw it over to you. Like what did you think of Diamond Mine to begin with? And what about, if we were to rebuild Diamond Mine, who'd go in there? Do you think they're going to, if we look back on Diamond Mine in the future, was it a success or a bit of a failure?
Yeah. So I think unfortunately for Diamond Mine, it was one of those sort of right place, wrong time, if that makes sense, where the group that started it, of course, a lot of the contract information is not really public until it is public. And so I don't know how much was left on Roddy Strong and the length of the deals. But I know that within probably 2 or 3 weeks, Strong was gone. Bivens was in AEW. Rust was gone. They cut, it was one of those where they were doing the budget cuts plus contracts plus whatever. And it was like, oh boy, we've got this cool new fight. No, we don't.
Right.
And I think they were kind of dead in the water before they got started. But I don't think the idea itself, once it got the Creeds and Ivy and sort of started building that way, I thought it was a really cool, hey, here's a stable for former amateur wrestlers who are turning into professional wrestlers and watch them as they are the best of that best. And so I think that's kind of where they got to. I certainly would have liked to have seen a bit more of Creeds and Nile with someone like Roddy as a mentor, because I think that could have had some good legs to sort of breathe a bit. And now that it's sort of kaput, which again makes me sad, and I don't know what that means for Ivy Nile in the long run, I think if she were to take on the mantle of rebuilding it, you know, I wonder if we could give, and now I'm blanking on her name, and I hesitate to describe her physically because I don't want to limit her to just her physical description, but the blonde woman who her finishing move was she did a split over somebody's chest. I don't know why I'm blanking on her name.
Nikita Lyons.
Yes, I think Nikita Lyons could be a good female reintroduction for a woman because she's been out for a while and could use a nice reintroduction. And, you know, I think male-wise, I'm sure there are a handful of candidates. You know, several of the names that come to mind, I feel like I would name them, and then they would put them in a program with someone that would never at all interact with Diamond Mine and completely ruin the purpose of that. You know, I wonder in terms of sort of the cagey veteran, I think Tyler Bate could be a cool sort of male Diamond Mine member as a, again, I'm that old school sort of stiff
yeah.
wrestling pedigree, and let me use my experience to elevate. So I think that could be a cool male and female name to get it going again. And then overall, like I said, I think they can certainly go back to it if they want. You know, I just feel bad that iteration one was sort of dead in the water.
Yeah.
And iteration two was a victim of having a very promising tag team that the main roster wants up. And so it's like, well, what do you do with just Ivy Nile, really?
Yeah.
And so kind of sad that way, but I do think it's something that could work if they wanted it to.
No, I agree. I think, you know, I think you're pretty spot on. I mean, Diamond Mine, I think coming out of the gate, it looked like it was pretty hot. You know, we had, and it was kind of one of these things where I was kind of wondering how hot it was going to be because how hot could Roderick Strong necessarily be as the leader of a stable in WWE, especially. But, you know, I thought it worked, especially you had like the Silent Hachiman in the back, you had Malcolm Bivens on the mic, and I felt like they had the whole workings of what could be like an amazing faction. And then, yeah, of course, they kind of started getting a little bit nerfed and, you know, just kind of victim of circumstance, whatnot. But, yeah, I think overall Diamond Mine's probably going to be, at least in my mind, looked at as like, I guess a mediocre success. I think because it was at least a vehicle to get like, you know, Ivy Nile over a little bit and the Creed brothers, especially. But I think it's going to kind of be remembered for, you know, it's kind of starts and stops, you know, and
well, almost just, like, you know, coulda, shoulda, woulda.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's, I feel like there's so many things they could have done with it. As far as like a reboot, if Ivy Nile did want to try and reboot down the road with the current roster as it stands, there's a couple names that came to mind. And the first one for me would be Gable Steveson. And that's partly because Damon Kemp was in the group. And I think there's kind of just a built-in story there. And it also kind of fits the narrative of you know, former like amateur athletes joining Diamond Mine, you know, trying to beef up their skills and whatnot. But then the other one is Kalani Jordan, and she wasn't necessarily an amateur wrestler or anything, but she's coming in, you know, as a gymnast, you know, and I mean, right now, obviously, she's paired with Dana Brooke, but you know, who knows how long Dana Brooke's going to be down there in NXT. So like that could certainly be an interesting pairing, you know, kind of to elevate her as well. But unfortunately, I think we've probably seen the last of Diamond Mine. So that's kind of where we are there. All right. So yeah, so Brian, thank you very much for the email from the other day for a different show, but hey, it was a good way to start the show off. So why not? Let's, like I said, let's go over to the phone lines here. And, we have area code 814. You should be able to hear us and let us know, who you are and what you want to talk about.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Hey Ryan, how are we doing tonight?
Good. I had a question on Chelsea Green. I don't know if you saw her little video she just did saying that the internet is wrong and that's a replica title belt that Zack Ryder was wearing. That initially they reported that he was wearing her tag team titles to a wrestling show, but she addressed it to her Twitter universe saying that that was just the bogus spot, and she showed the real title in her video. Do you think WWE actually looks into that? Is that why you think she posted that video, to clear herself from any wrongdoing with what could have happened if WWE officials actually thought she gave her belt away?
I'm actually not. I don't think I'm up on this. Are you? Are you, Kevin?
Yeah, I am. And I didn't know where Ryan was going with it, so I was going to chime in. But Zack Ryder posted to his Twitter, and I don't remember if they were at the premiere for the Cody Rhodes thing or he was at a separate independent show. But like, basically, his tweet was, "I'm one half of the tag team title or women's tag team titles," and he had one of the women's tag belts over his shoulder as if he was sort of parading that around with the other belts that he's in ownership of.
Okay.
And then sort of in his comments sort of went through the, well, I mean, I'm married to one half of the tag champs, so am I not by the transitive property also a tag champ, that sort of thing. I took it as lighthearted and I laughed because I think most of what, as talented as Zach is, I think he still sort of takes on the kind of the happy joker sort of role in that. And so I don't know that I would have looked at it nefariously or that it was stolen. And so like, it kind of just, it makes, I don't want to say makes me sad, but like if Chelsea thinks she's covering her butt by coming out to say, well, there's no way I would let the actual belt leave the house. And Zach, of course, bought a replica one on WWE.com. Like, I don't know that Hunter or Vince cares. Like, what does it matter so long as you have it for your next show? But yeah, I did see that, and I thought it was humorous and didn't think she had to cover her tracks, but maybe she was getting pressure from somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, that could certainly be. Like, the way I kind of feel about it is, like, it was probably some, you know, lighthearted and whatnot, but I can't imagine they'd be super furious over it. Now, granted, there was somebody that showed up at an Impact taping years and years ago, part of a tag team. I can't think of his name, but it was like 2008, 2009 or something like that. And he showed up at an Impact taping and they wound up kind of, I don't think he got fired over it, but he got a lot of heat and then, you know, quit, let go like a couple months later. I can't imagine they'd have like a lot of, especially, I mean, it looks like it was at a DDT Pro show. I can't imagine they'd have a whole lot of, like, they'd be, like, super upset about it. That could be why she wound up making some sort of a post. It also could just be she was just kind of responding to a lot of the lovely people on Twitter. I'll leave it at that, lovely people on Twitter. And just to kind of, like, stop the rumor mill would also be, I could kind of see that being, you know, being a way that, you know, she try to address it as well. But yeah, that kind of makes a little bit of sense to me. Ryan, any follow-up or another question for us?
It was one of the Highlanders, I remember, that appeared on Impact.
Yes. Yes, it was. It was one of the Highlanders. That's right.
Okay. My second question is on Dominic Mysterio. I don't know if you realize that he was, I think, the only person in WWE history to main event all three shows in NXT, SmackDown, Raw. Do you see WWE doing this more often with the talent and showcasing them during the main event during all three of their premier shows?
Like in 1 week? Is that what you meant?
Yeah, like they did with Dominic.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm sure it's not. Well, actually, I guess it might be the first time it's happened because it's Raw, SmackDown, and NXT. So, I don't know. I mean, they're probably like, and this is actually something that I wanted to talk with you about, Kevin, you know, anyway, but, you know, main roster talent, you know, weaving in and out of NXT and NXT talent weaving in and out of, you know, Raw and SmackDown. But I don't know if it's even necessarily something they would have done on purpose. Maybe it was just the way that the, you know, the shows wound up getting booked. Cause I know a lot of times some, you know, they'll accidentally do something that, you know, is a record or whatever, and then they'll kind of pick up on it and you know, run with it, you know, kind of make it a story or something like that. But whether or not they do it, you know, they could certainly do it in the future to, like, elevate somebody, get somebody a bit more exposure. But I don't know if I'm necessarily in favor for it. With Dominic, I he's got so much heat right now. He is this organic heat magnet that is unlike anything we've seen in quite some time. I mean, I feel like people just want him off their screen, and that is amazing. Like, that's the – as a heel, you can't, like – you can't wish for anything like that. So I think right now they could kind of get away with that because, you know, not only is he so hot, but the rest of the Judgment Day is hot. So, I mean, why not put them on, you know, put them in the main event on everything and, you know, kind of try to draw some eyeballs to the product. I know, you know, that is kind of what one of the things they're trying to do is get some more, you get the ratings in NXT up. You know, they're not super happy with the ratings lately, so they're trying to get them up. And that's part of the reason we're seeing a lot of, like, you know, Seth Rollins coming down, defending the WWE, you know, World Heavyweight Championship and things like that. But yeah, Kevin, let me throw it over to you and get your thoughts.
Yeah, I think I would agree that I don't think it was an intentional choice because I think he certainly main evented NXT because it was his match against Wesley. But I think it's one of those where I know I saw it on several wrestling Twitter and Facebook pages, and it's a true statement. But I think anytime a faction is like he's part of a faction for SmackDown and Raw, and even, you know, even if he wrestled in one of the matches or if he was just sort of parading while Finn and Damian fought. So I don't think that was a 2 weeks ago the writing room sat down and said, okay, this week Dominic's going to be our main eventer. And So I'm not beating the dead horse there. That said, I certainly think, as you said, Nate, he is a heat magnet. I do think that it is the good heat and not the go-away heat that is just cringe. It's not cringe at all. Like, crowds legitimately love to boo this guy. I know, Nate, when I wrote in to NXT on Tuesday, I was a bit critical of Dominic winning the North American title. And I think several days post, I still am, because I think even if he'll end up, like, his next match on NXT, he drops it. What was the point? But aside from that for right now, certainly there is no bigger heel in the business in terms of the type of heat he generates. So I'm controlling for Roman Reigns, of course. But in terms of that, just that, yeah, that smack him in the face kind of heel, that's him. And I think, you know, if he's drawing eyes and people are tuning in just to see him get his, you have to feature him. I just wonder in terms of, like, the hardware to give him something to brag on, I almost wonder, should he have won Money in the Bank by some fluky way versus owning a title that the last two title holders worked very hard to establish as being meaningful? And I don't think he gives you that, but it gives him something to generate even more heat from, if that makes sense.
No, it definitely does. It definitely does. And it's funny because going back to his actual win, you know, in NXT, you know, that was Tuesday.
Yeah, yep.
You know, post-COVID, I don't know about you guys, but post-COVID, it's time just all blends together for me. But no, this past Tuesday, you know, when he actually won the title, I was a little mixed. I was more high on it than you were. And I still am. But, like, I do share a lot of that. I mean, the North American title, it's probably my favorite title in NXT, not just because it's, like, the workhorse title, but it's so goddamn gorgeous. I love that belt, the color of the belt, the style of the belt. It's probably my favorite belt in the company, in terms of style anyway. But it also has that kind of prestige to it that, you know, Carmelo Hayes, Wes Lee, they really did help to elevate that title back to being a meaningful belt. And I feel like the two of them especially, you know, because they had both of them lengthy reigns and very, very dominant champions. With Dominic, it's like I said, I'm torn because, like, it kind of, you know, tarnishes that legacy a little bit, you know, and makes maybe makes it feel a little less meaningful that they worked so hard for the titles and all of that. But like also at the same time, where they are trying to build the ratings for NXT, and Dominic is such a polarizing character, I feel like it's a good idea, because you're not only are you getting Dominic on NXT or Judgment Day in general, and other main roster talent for that matter too, down in NXT. So people that, you know, maybe aren't tuning in to NXT, like, oh, hey, I like Dana Brooke, I'm going to tune in, or, you know, I like the Judgment Day, I'm going to tune in. But now we're also seeing the NXT North American title get defended on main roster WWE TV. So now it's like, oh, what's, you know, maybe the casual fan, what's this NXT thing? Kind of hear about it. Oh, hey, this is cool. Maybe I'll tune in. So I think that's kind of, that's probably a lot of what they're doing here. But with Dominic, it's like, I think it could work. I think it could certainly work to try and elevate those ratings. I'm wondering now what this means for the North American title, and I think we'll get that answer on Tuesday. But, you know, coming into the Great American Bash, we were talking about Mustafa Ali potentially being the next North American champion. That's kind of what it looked like. And he comes down from the main roster. He asserts himself between, you know, Wesley and Tyler Bate. And it looked like that's where we were headed. So now what? Do we go to like a fatal four-way between Dominic, Tyler Bate, Mustafa Ali and Wes Lee? Do we go Mustafa Ali versus, which is kind of heel, Mustafa Ali versus Dominic Mysterio? I'm really interested to see how they build this story out. I don't see Dominic having a lengthy reign with it. I do think it's going to be, you know, if anything, he's going to, if he has it beyond the bash, I'm going to be surprised. If he carries it for 3 months, I'll be like, I'll eat my foot, I guess. I don't know. I don't know why my foot, it just sounded good at the time. Ryan, any follow-up or another question for us? We'll give you one more.
Hey, final question's on Abdullah the Butcher. I don't know if you saw the documentary, but you're talking about how wild his matches were. I know there's an urban legend around here. He had a match with Terry Funk that tore down the gymnasium of the local college. I unfortunately didn't get to see. Did you ever get to see Abdullah the know if his matches were any more crazy than what they were on actual TV? Because I know they had to be turned, you know, toned down a good bit being on TBS and ESPN when you were for world class.
Yeah, I mean, I've gone back and watched some of his matches and some of his some of the content that he's been in. But I don't know if I've seen anything more gory than that necessarily. You know, I know I've got a scene, just this vision in my head of somebody jabbing a fork into his forehead. And I want to say that might have been one of the War Games matches or the one that he got electrocuted in. And that was the finish. I can't think of a match, but I think people know what I'm talking about. I don't know. Like I haven't had a whole lot of exposure otherwise to Abdullah the Butcher. Kevin, how about yourself?
Yeah, no, I was going to say, other than like rewatching stuff for the enjoyment of like paying homage to one of the like original hardcore, I don't know if death match is the term I want to use, but you know, one of those guys who was not afraid to sacrifice his body for a moment or for a show. I certainly have gone back and watched some of that. I know I've seen him at a couple of conventions years ago. He was doing meet and greets, but I didn't get to watch him in his prime enough to be able to say, wow, decibel blasting or not. But I do know that he was an attraction that people very much loved to see, again, because he wasn't, you know, I'm sure promoters would come and say, hey, here's what we're thinking, and he'd come back with an idea that was three times worse, and they'd be like, all right, let's do it, because he just lived for those moments. And so I there's something to be said for that. Certainly nowadays we know some of the pitfalls and issues that could arise from repeated nails and forks and pins and tubes and all that, but you know, back before sort of internet proliferation, like, That was appointment. If he was on a card, I think people were ready to see what he would do next.
100%. Yeah, I just pulled up his Wikipedia page because, like, you know, I don't know as much about Abdullah the Butcher as I probably should. And I did not realize he was active until 2010. Like, I would have thought he was probably done, you know, maybe the 90s or something like that. That's crazy. But, yeah, yeah. Ryan, thank you very much. Any follow-up on that?
The match you were talking about was the Chamber of Horrors match at Halloween Havoc.
Yes!
1991 that had Sting's team. Even Razor Ramon was on Abdullah's team and Big Van Vader. And so there were a lot of wrestlers involved in that match.
Yes, yes. That was at the Chamber of Horrors match. Yeah, I could not think of the name of it. I knew it wasn't. Like, I knew it wasn't a War Games match, but it just wasn't coming to my brain. So, cool. Ryan, thank you very much, as always, man. We definitely appreciate it.
Thanks for taking the call.
No problem, man. No problem. All right, we got one more caller in queue, Arius Code 615. We'll get to you in just a moment. There was one thing that I did want to talk with you about, Kevin, and I kind of touched on it a little bit, but I know we've talked about it on PWT Talks NXT, but I'm curious on your thoughts about the – you know, kind of interweaving between Raw, SmackDown, and NXT right now, how we're seeing, you know, Judgment Day, Dana Brooke, you know, Mustafa Ali come down, Seth Rollins come down to NXT, and then how we're, you know, we're starting to see some of the NXT talent, you know, on the main roster. I think it was we saw the Creed brothers in the background on SmackDown. We saw Tony D'Angelo in the background on SmackDown. Same thing with Stax, Wes Lee, I think, Dragon Lee as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah, Dragon Lee. Yep.
You know, so we've seen a lot of you know, intermingling with these talents. You know, just kind of your thoughts. What do you think they're doing here? Is it trying to get like a ratings draw here, or you know, or is it something else?
Well, I think it is and it isn't, right? So I think when they're bringing sort of main roster performers down to NXT, it 100%. Is let's try to get more eyes. Now, the trick to that is sometimes they advertise that and sometimes they don't. And so I think in the days where they advertise it, a la a Seth Rollins or a Judgment Day or something like that, you know, that's the, oh, geez, well, I got nothing going on a Tuesday. I'll tune in and check it out. You know, on the days where the surprise people tune in, you know, are they then trying to capture, because I remember hearing Wade talking on one of his, I don't know if it was one of his hotlines or whatever, how now because AEW Collision is on a Saturday, that some of the ratings metrics groups are doing like the 7-day rewatch as part of their measurement because of like the odd day of the week that it happens. And so when you look at those numbers, it obviously makes them a more comparable show to some of the other not a show shows. And so, you know, you sort of run that risk when you don't advertise it, that then you're counting on sort of water cooler talk on Wednesday of someone going, bro, you missed it. So-and-so showed up and it was so cool. And now they're going to go back and watch it. You know, certainly I think, see, and again, I don't know internally how the coaching structure has changed since COVID and NXT. And so part of me has thought for a while that the reason they send some of the main roster guys down is like another set of eyes, right? So like Hunter or Vince or someone's like, yeah, we're thinking about bringing so-and-so up in the next little bit. Let's go have a main roster guy go wrestle him and get a more hands-on approach in case sort of those coaching numbers are not as thick as they used to be. So I think that might be part of it too. Certainly when all those guys showed up on SmackDown, you know, certainly that was the indicator, as it usually is, of, well, yeah, if you're wondering why these guys have been taking L's, it's because they're getting ready to come up. You know, but I think when you bring the main roster guys down to NXT, in most cases that I can think of in the last, let's just say, year to 2 years, so 12 to 24 months, in most cases it hasn't felt organic. And I think that's where my problem is I don't have any problem sending folks down like Dana Brooke or like Apollo Crews or any of those folks. But like when they literally just show up without a mission statement, as a storyteller, as someone who teaches and lives marketing, like that's where I sort of scratch my head, where it's like, okay, cool, and they're going to get cheers because they're main roster folks, but, like, why are they there? And they're never really given a chance to say, well, you know, the reason I'm back is blah. When it makes sense, of course, send them every time because maybe they're, excuse me, feuding with someone who they used to train with when they, you know, whatever the storyline is. But I want it to make sense when you send a main roster person to NXT. But when you are test running the NXT people on Raw and SmackDown, you know, of course you're trying to see, do people actually know who they are? What are we going to do with them when they get here, et cetera, et cetera. And so in that case, I'm all for it because that's hopefully why NXT is still NXT, is that eventually you want these people to make a jump. And how do you know if you don't sort of try it out from here or there?
No, that definitely makes sense. Definitely makes sense. It's like, I feel like that's kind of part of it. Definitely part of it, you know, trying to get, you get some exposure for these, for the newer talent, get them ready. You know, get them ready for the main roster. Certainly, certainly. All right, cool. So we do have we get somebody else that jumped in as well. So let's kill this conversation. Let's jump over to the caller queue and go to area code 615. You should be on now. Let's go ahead. Let us know who you are and what you want to talk about.
Nate and the professor, this is Sean, a VIP member from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And I want to say, Nate, I want to liven up the conversation, man. I don't want to kill anything. I want to liven this puppy up. This is exciting stuff right here. But, Nate, you guys are awesome. I'm always fun talking with you guys. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, doing very good, man. Doing very good. It's been a while. It's been probably a couple months, a few months now since I think we talked last.
Yeah, it has. With NXT, it hasn't been able to work as far as me watching a lot of it, which is sad because I do, you know, really enjoy NXT, and it's been sad I haven't been able to. So I've been able to keep up with you guys, you know, talking about it, which has been really fun. And I try to watch every episode, or I always say watch, but I can't watch it because I don't look at you. I can't see you guys. I can only listen. But that's a whole other story.
That's true.
Professor, it's always good talking to you, man. First I want to say, on the SmackDown post, I don't know if you guys listened, but Ashley from down in Florida was, you know, the on-site, Wade's on-site correspondent talking about SmackDown. And I just want to give her a shout-out, too, because she gave me a shout-out. And I always love Ashley. I hope she can call in more. I always enjoy her and, again, all the callers. I mean, all the callers are really fun, but Ashley is one of my favorites. I wanted to give her a shout-out. But I wanted to, you know, you guys are just – the Torch is just the best. I got to throw it out there. The Torch is the best. You guys are the best. Everybody's the best. It sounds like I'm just a big white meat baby face, but I am. It's truly who I
right.
am. And I want to call people
you are.
Out.
You're like
and, right?
waving the Torch flag, man, waving the Torch flag.
But it's the truth. But anyway. So I want to go to NXT talk. I had a question for you guys because I was thinking about this a lot, actually. And so since I haven't been able to watch as much, you know, a lot lately, I've been following you guys and I've listened to you guys talk about Thea Hill. And I've seen a little bit,
yeah.
you know, back when they were doing a lot of the skits before, you know, I have not seen her wrestle much yet. I will say that. I'm going to go back and actually watch tonight now that I was thinking about it and on some YouTube clips. But I wanted to hear what you guys thought, in more the professor as well, because I know I haven't heard him really talk about her a lot. But the moments I've seen her, I have, and I know she's very, very young, so you know there's still plenty of upside, and I do think there is. From what I've seen, I have really liked it, and I'm curious to get to watch some of the match against, who did she wrestle last week, Nate? Remind me.
It was Electra Lopez. Yes.
Okay, well, that's not much. I want to see it because I want to see how she's kind of gotten better in the ring. From what I've seen, I've liked. I know Kelly raves about her, just really loves her a lot. And so I wanted to hear what you guys thought, because are you guys just fully as high? Because, I mean, I do like what I've seen, but, she's young. So I just want to hear you guys talk about her and where you think she's going, her trajectory is. She's kind of developed in the storyline with Chase U.
I absolutely adore Thea Hill. I 100% cannot get enough of her. She's probably one of my favorite things in NXT right now. And it's crazy to say that because when Chase U, and I think I talked about this this past week, but when Chase U first debuted, I was not super high on it. I thought it was so stupid, and I didn't quite understand the gimmick. But then Andre Chase started bringing on pupils, and Yothia Hale debuted alongside Bodie Hayward as his roommate. And she has come leaps and bounds from there. And I think she's 19. I don't think she's 20 yet. I think she's still 19. Even at 19 years old, she understands her character. There's little tiny nuances that she does. Tuesday before, there was a backstage segment where she was talking with Chase and Hudson, and about how she lost to Tiffany Stratton and how she wanted a rematch. And there was just this shift in her character. You could see this kind of this anger, but she still had the energy there as well. I feel like she really understands her character and understands how to even work a crowd at this point. Granted, it's a small crowd and it's the NXT crowd, so they're a unique bunch, but she gets it. She definitely gets it. Her in-ring is, she's still got a whole, a lot of work to do, but I think her first couple of few matches were mixed tag matches where she really didn't do a whole lot. And from what we saw in those matches, we could kind of sort of understand why. Now that she's had a few singles matches under her belt, yeah, she's still green. By no stretch of imagination is she going to have a five-star match anytime soon, but there is a lot of promise there. She's improved quite a bit since those first couple of mixed tag matches. And I thought her match against Tiffany Stratton was great. I think the match she had against Electra Lopez, it wasn't very long. I think for what they did, they did a pretty good job with it. I really like this whole, and I'm calling it idiot savant for lack of a better term. That's not necessarily what it is, but the fact that she now learned Kimura lock from Dempsey and Gulak, and now she has the meanest Kimura lock in NXT. I like that storyline. She's young, she's still a newbie, she's still learning, but now all of a sudden she's got this linchpin that she can just cinch right in and cause somebody to tap out. And I think it's great if they use that and capitalize on that during her rematch against Stratton. I don't think she's going to win the title. I think she's going to come close. She might get another visual win, maybe. I don't think she's going to win the title, but I think it's going to help cement her as somebody to kind of be a little bit more let me rephrase that. It's going to cement her as somebody to take a little bit more seriously. I think she's still got a long way to go before she's going to be main eventing or anything of that sort. But there's a lot of upside there. There's a lot of upside. And I could gush about the Hale all day, so I'm going to pass it your way, Kevin.
Thank you, and I will take the ball and keep heading towards the basket. Sean, always good to hear from you. I do enjoy getting interactive, and I love that we've been more interactive on Twitter. And also, I'll see your praise, and I will raise you because I know a handful of times in my early bullpen work with the NXT show, I had told Tom and Kelly and Nate just what an awesome community I do think not only the Torch correspondents and writers are, but also the U's and the I's, Sean, that call in and help out and even just listen along. And I was telling them one of those times where for all the times that you would email or call the good Reverend or any of sort of the, or Ryan,
yeah,
or any,
right,
from Cumberland, any of those guys, you feel like you know each other, and we do and we don't all at the same time. But that's to me what community building is about. And I know a couple times I've asked, and one time was sort of during sort of the middle of COVID, but I would love to help, and I'll go on record to say I would love to help organize it. But I really think that Wade should look into, even if it's in the Twin Cities, doing like a TorchCon and like getting all the contributors together, doing some live podcasting in a hotel ballroom, getting the listeners to meet each other, getting the, you know what I mean? Like, because I do think a lot of us have never met in person. Even people who have been working on a show for 1 to 5 years together have never met in person. And I think that would just be such a cool thing to rent out a hotel and just have a weekend of talking wrestling and doing wrestling and all that. I think it would be pretty well attended. I don't know.
It's funny because I did a podcast. I did PWT Talks NXT with Tom. Well, I mean, Tom and Kelly, you know, but with Tom for what, like 3 years before he jumped off the show. And I'm finally going to get my chance to meet Tom in a couple months. I'm going down to Florida and we're going to get together. So I'm like, I'm super pumped about it.
I'm jealous. Can you send some love through a handshake for me, please?
I will. I definitely will.
Okay. So well, sorry. Back to the theme. Oh, go ahead, Sean. Go ahead.
Well, Kevin, real quick, while we're thinking about it, I know this. We don't need to go too long, obviously, because it's about wrestling and not that. But I'm with you. Like, I just think we need more love in this world, as Reverend brings up a lot. We just need to have fun, have a place where we can all get together and have fun and just enjoy each other. And that's what life should be about, is enjoying each other and not dealing with all the stuff that's going on. Whether you agree with some stuff or you don't agree with other stuff, we just need more enjoyment of people getting together. So I agree with you.
Man, just let's all bring it in. Group hug. Group hug.
I'm all about group hugs. I'm Italian. Touch is my love language. You know, that's what it's all about.
Hey, even with the last name Lindbergh, I'm mostly Italian.
There you go.
Yep.
So as it relates to Thea, I know a couple weeks ago, in my email to the show, I guess critical is probably a fair word. I think she has a huge upside. I think she has a lot of the things that the company looks for in its wrestlers. Where I hope the coaching is focused on is her energy expenditure, right? So like, and I say this mostly with love because I am a Bugenhagen fan. I got to see him at a couple of live shows when NXT was still doing the traveling show. They came to Des Moines a few times and I got to see him there. And I do love him. But, like, when you start at a 9, where do you go? And I think where her growth needs to come, and it will, excuse me, come in the ring physically, but I think it's just that you can't scream and shout as you're normal, because where do you go when you're supposed to show excitement? Like, there's just got to be more range. And so that's where I hope that she spends some time working when she's not in the gym lifting or in the gym training, that they're doing some of those acting classes or some of those extemporaneous speaking classes where they impress upon her the need for range. Because in some of those cases where she's going to have to be serious, you can't be yelly, peppy serious. Like, there's got to be a different tone to that. And to this point, it's largely just been, hey, go immediately into sixth gear and see what happens. And not only will you get tired and lose your voice and all of that, but like, again, when we need you to convey a different message based on the segment or the interaction, where is that?
Sean, back to you.
Yeah. So, and I'll going back to what you're saying about Thea and Tiffany, you know, I mean, Tiffany needs to hold on to the title, cause I mean, she just, you know, got it, and Thea, there's so much work to do there and there's so much time. But and I'm curious about Tiffany too, because I really think, you know, her upside is even more tremendous, I think, than Thea's. But I just do wish, from what I've seen so far, because I did see the one at the show after she won the title and she got in the ring and kind of talked about who was going to face her next, and it was kind of, I didn't like her promo then. I think her promos still need to get a little better and give her some better material. But I think she's on the right track for sure. So I'm curious to see how that match is going to go. And I probably will watch NXT this week, because I do want to see that match and kind of see how Thea's gotten better in the ring. My next thing is, I want to go away from NXT, talk about the WWE, because I'm really enjoying the build to SummerSlam right now. I didn't know if I mean, I thought I was, but then the more these last couple Raws, I've really – well, SmackDowns, too. I've really enjoyed the build to a lot of these matches. I think they're doing WWE's in a really good spot right now. And AEW, I've said on many podcasts, I think they're going in a wrong direction, but that's a whole other podcast because I know, you know, you guys don't really watch it much. And I watch it quite a bit, but I've just been kind of maddened by some of the stuff they've done. But with the build to SummerSlam,
yep.
I want to talk about Seth and Finn particularly because when that match was first, you know, like, oh, this match is going to happen again. It's okay. You know, Seth's going on away. You know, I don't see Finn winning. And this and that and the other thing. But now the more they've built to this third match, they've intrigued me. They really have. Like, Finn, ever since, well, I'd say the last 6 months, Finn has gotten so much comfortable being a heel with Judgment Day. And Judgment Day as a whole has been really good anyway, even though it looked so bad at the beginning. But since this last year, they've turned the corner in a big way. Rhea is so over. I love what she's doing. With Finn, I think the same thing. As a heel, he's just coming to his own. He makes you believe he's going to beat Seth and can beat Seth. And that promo backstage was so good because, again, Seth, as much as I do enjoy the song when he comes out. And when I go, I'd want to sing the song too. But the laugh is really overdone, and I think he needs to get rid of that. And the backstage was so good because it was just so serious. They were like, I want to beat each other up. I want to do all this stuff. What have you thought of the build to this last match? Because I've really enjoyed it.
I'm really looking forward to this match. You know, not only Seth and Finn, you've got that built-in story coming from the original Universal title match, you know, to determine the first champion. And that's kind of where the build from this sort of originated. But I think they've done an amazing, amazing job, you know, getting people excited and pumped for SummerSlam. The fact that Judgment Day has become such a machine, I guess, for lack of a better word right now, they're just so popular. Everything they touch, I feel like, is just gold right now. I mean, I can't remember the last time I saw a segment with the Judgment Day in it that I was like, meh, that was okay. You know, it wasn't a good segment. They've, like you said, you know, when they first debuted, they're especially with, you know, when they, you know, had Edge and then they were going through the feud with Edge and the transition from Edge to Finn Balor and all that. I did not think the stable had legs. I really didn't. I thought, you know, we were going to see them feud with Edge for a little bit and, you know, Beth Phoenix and then kind of start to fizzle out. But man, they really have found – this is like that proverbial lightning in a bottle, I feel like. The four of them have fantastic chemistry. I know that they're all riding together now, you know, and that they're trying to spend as much time together as possible to kind of organically build that chemistry so it comes across on TV. And I think that's kind of a lost – I don't want to say a lost art. It's not like I'm in the business and I know who everybody's riding partners are. But I don't feel like it's something people do as much as they used to. You know, they kind of just ride with their friends or whatnot. But the fact that they're, you know, I was watching, I think it was Chris Van Vliet, if that's how you pronounce his last name, have an interview with Dominic, and that's Dominic saying is that they're constantly traveling together. And I think the fact that the Judgment Day, and I went on a bit of a tangent here, but because the Judgment Day is so strong and so popular right now, and there really isn't a weak link in the stable, everybody feels just as important as everybody else for the most part. It really helps to elevate each one of those people. So, you know, Finn Balor coming in, challenging Seth Rollins for the title. You've got, you know, Seth, yeah, he's, you know, he's a champ, but what's Judgment Day going to do to try and help Finn Balor win? You know, things like that. There's so much that could happen, so many different ways they could go with it. I'm definitely intrigued. I still don't see Seth losing it. Then again, I didn't see Wesley losing the North American title to a member of the Judgment Day, but I think Seth is still so fledgling with his reign. I don't necessarily see him losing it just yet. That said, if Finn was to win, it would just, I mean, that would now mean every single member of Judgment Day has gold around their waist, or a briefcase in their hand. And that's pretty cool. I mean, I feel like I think the last stable to do that was probably Undisputed Era, and that was, what, 2018, 2017, 2018, something like that. It had to have been 2018, 2019, because I was doing the show, and I started in 2018. So, yeah, that makes sense. I've rambled on a little bit here. So, Kevin, let me throw it over to you on to build the SummerSlam for Finn and Seth.
Yeah, well, I agree with you that I think, and Sean, I agree with you, I think the build has been very good. I have a text group with my brother and a good buddy, and we chat wrestling on and off. And one of the topics we continue to sort of circle around is long play versus slow play, and which do you prefer, and why sometimes things feel rushed, but why when there's, you know, that sort of thing. But I do think that the build for SummerSlam has been very good. I am the eternal face, but I love Finn, and I continue to lament his story right now that he was the first Universal Champion and never got to be the Universal Champion. And my heart, and again, I know that story and real life are different, but I think a lot of people that have followed him from that time, it's hard not to agree with him, where it stinks that you won the ultimate prize, the very first one to do it, and literally you had to give it up 48 hours later because you had tore your shoulder or labrum, whatever it was. And so I love watching him. I think he's a great talent. It's a shame that prior to Hunter having more of the creative say-so, Vince didn't really seem to know what to do with him, which I don't know how you can mess that up, but never say never, I guess. As I think about Seth, certainly he is immensely talented. Obviously, people love singing his song. I think the thing that I like about his current iteration, and Sean, I agree, the laugh, again, and I'm thinking back to Wade, and I always sort of hear his voice, and I forget who else used to echo it, but that whole idea of what is Seth freaking Rollins, right? Like, what is the character?
Yep,
what does that
cold.
Mean?
Stone Cold.
Yeah.
Yep. Stone Cold.
And
Wade and Stone Cold, yeah.
I part of me wonders, like, because I think, like, it is not an accident that when they did WrestleMania in Hollywood and they were doing those vignettes, that he played the Joker in that one with Becky where Becky was Batman. Because I think that is what he's going for, is like the maniacal guy who, when the lights come on, it's not joking anymore. I'm going to literally break your neck and move on. But I don't know that that's clear enough to casual fans that just sort of see this guy laugh, wear really flashy outfits, which I'd love to see that bill at the end of every month, because it seems like he's never worn the same outfit twice. And so, if you're going to be the Joker, lean into that more. Like, I think there are ways for us to sort of know that that's kind of where he's going, because I think that's exactly what he's doing. It just is not clear overtly. And so unless you're a moderate or hardcore fan, and again, the trick in wrestling demographics is not appealing to the people who are already drinking your Kool-Aid, but how do we bring more people in to try the Kool-Aid? That distinction has to be clearer, because just to call him Seth freaking Rollins and let him sort of be exuberant, it doesn't mean a whole lot when you're trying to buy into his story. And right now, if you had to pick somebody to buy into, Finn's story is the more relatable story of the, you know, for the last X number of years, I've had to watch other people get these opportunities and be this guy while I never really got a chance to get my own story off.
Yeah.
Off the tarmac, if you will. But I am very excited to see the match. I do also think, I think it's 51-49 that Seth retains. But again, if they're trying to do sort of an Undisputed Era on the main roster, why not give everybody a belt of some kind, and Damian having the briefcase, and see what they can do now with gold? I think that would be a fun sort of get us through Survivor Series and through December and into sort of Rumble next year.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Sean, let's throw it back to you.
Yeah, so, Professor, I just want to say you brought up how Vince, how could he ruin, or how can he mess up Finn Balor? Well, Vince also ruined Bayley's babyface character. How do you do that?
Yeah.
I don't really know, but he did it somehow. Don't ask me why. Anyway,
yeah.
Another story. Nate, Nate, is that one of the worst? I think that's the worst he's ruined. I think that I don't know how you could. He should have made millions and millions of dollars with Bayley as a babyface.
Oh my god!
And totally
he
ruined it.
He absolutely could. He absolutely could have. I feel like there was a lot of missed opportunity there, but we now have this version of Bayley, and I'm really okay with that.
Yeah, no, I am too. I like her as a heel just as well. But my last thing, or I want to say too, going back to the real quick, the torch song.
Sean, sorry, can I interrupt?
Yeah.
Sean, can I interrupt? Sorry. Another person that I will never forgive him for, and Nate, I know you and Kelly and I and probably Tom had this talk one of the last times that Tom was still on, how he neutered Shayna Baszler. She
oh, God.
Oh,
wrapped.
Gosh.
She
oh,
was
that'd
a
be,
killer.
That
she
worse.
Was gift-wrapped.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't want to compare because I think the ultimate babyface and the ultimate heel have their own places, but you literally had to do nothing to Shayna except let her continue to break arms and win, and you immediately turned her into a lower mid-card tag-along. And she's slowly, I hope, rebuilding here with this Ronda thing. But I will never forgive him for that because she was gift-wrapped.
Yes, she was. Yes, she was. And then she turned into a vampire.
Oh, God.
Sorry
okay,
for interrupting, Sean.
No, that's a fair point because I actually forgot. I've thought about that before, too. So that was a good one. The last thing I was going to bring up was not necessarily the SummerSlam hype, because I don't think he's obviously not going to have a big match at SummerSlam, which is unfortunate, because I wanted to ask you guys about Riddle a little bit, because another one I'm struggling with. I honestly am struggling with. So I've heard Wade and people say, even Todd say, they're not, like, Riddle just seems lost, but I feel like when Riddle, as this bro character's kind of developed, because NXT, I watched a lot of his NXT matches when he first came up, and some of those takeover matches with him were so good, and he was so over. And he came onto the main roster, and I know he had some of the stuff with the issues with some women, and I don't know how that's affected some of this. I don't know. That could be. I can't judge. I don't know. But obviously with Orton, he was super over. But then even on his own, he was still over, and I feel like he's gotten more serious, and then they've just fed him to a bunch of people, and he just lost over and over and over. I don't know where he goes from here, and I'm really kind of – I think it's frustrating to me because I really like Riddle. I think there's so much upside with him as well. I talked to Wade earlier, and he was like asking what percentage I thought he would get over and become a big star. I was still more than 50% because, it's like, again, he's got the MMA background. He's a great – he's relatable, I feel like, to a lot of people. He's got just the funness about him, the charisma he has. And now I just don't know where he goes from here. So what have you thought about Riddle, and where do you think – you know, where the potential might go, if there is any at all? And, guys, like I said, I appreciate you guys very much. It's always good to be on with you, and I appreciate you guys taking my call, as always.
How many fish could Bobby Fish fry if Bobby Fish could fry fish? I can't believe I can still remember that, but I can. That was my favorite my favorite Matt Riddle moment of all time.
Oh.
Sean, thank you.
Oh,
very,
that's right. I forgot about
thank
that.
You very much. Yeah, man.
Thanks, Sean.
I,
good to talk to you.
It's funny. I was in the car the other day, and I don't know why that popped into my head, but it did. And it's like, I want to say that on a podcast again, and you gave me the perfect opportunity, so perfect. No, Matt Riddle, I feel like there is a lot of potential for him to break out more so than he has. I feel like it's kind of been a lot of start and stops for him. I feel like everything with like he was doing with Randy Orton, I mean, that was all a lot of fun. It was, you know, good TV. And of course, you know, Orton goes, gets hurt. There is some talks about Orton potentially returning here at SummerSlam. And, you know, if that's the case, then I'm thinking maybe, you know, that's kind of where Riddle goes. You know, I'm assuming, I'm assuming they'll wind up kind of putting the two of them back together because he's still, like, you know, Riddle still kind of, you know, refers to the Viper, and RK-Bro and all of that stuff. So I almost kind of feel like he, you know, they'll wind up putting the two of them back together, and then I think they're going to split them up and put them in a feud. You know, if I had to guess, Randy's career, at least full-time career, is probably winding down, especially after this injury. And that's a guess. We don't know that for sure, but that's just me spitballing. But, you know, pay off the angle that they've been working on for, you know, the last couple of years at least. Yeah, I know Randy's been out for a while now, but, you know, kind of pay that off, and you have the two of them break up, and then have Riddle go over, you know. Maybe if, as long as it's not Randy's first feud back, you know, have them feud with a couple of people first and get Randy a couple wins under his belt first, and then have the two of them feud, have Matt Riddle go over and establish a new star, you know, kind of pass that torch. That's what I kind of hope to see with him, but with him, I mean, Matt Riddle, but yeah, time will tell. I almost called you Bruce. Kevin, let me throw it to you.
I would gladly respond to Bruce. I agree with both of you guys. I'm a big Riddle guy too, and I watched, was actively watching sort of the end of his independent run before he got signed to NXT. And I even remember watching some of his MMA fights with my brother. And go with me on the comparison, but if Seth Rollins is a switch flipper on one side of the spectrum, I think Riddle's charm is being a switch flipper on the other side, where it's sort of the, again, perhaps the you know, the bro sort of persona, and say what you will about that. But that idea of everything's, you know, carefree and cool until it isn't, and then watch out because I can legitimately break your neck. And I think he's one of those that, another one where when he got called up, you think to yourself, how do you screw this guy up? And they kind of have prior to his pairing with Orton. And I think he deserves so much better. And I think he hasn't done himself a lot of favors in his personal life and sort of the news that has made. And you'd like for that to be in a vacuum. But unfortunately, in the social media world, everything you do is subject to somebody putting it out there if they want. But, you know, I want him to keep his nose clean enough to demonstrate to the people who make the decisions that he's worthy of a push equal to his talent, because his talent is very top tier, top of the card. Give him a belt and let him go. But I think the gimmick perhaps needs a little polishing. And I just think, like I said, I think lately it's been two steps forward, one step back with his outside of the wrestling life. And, you know, like even in the sports world, you're not going to give a guy a major contract who's an injury bug or who's a headache in the locker room, because that's going to end up showing poorly on your organization. And so I just want him to sort of know the gift that he has so that he can hit that next level, because I know he's capable of it, and I know he would do good things if he was given it. But I think the two sides need to show each other that each side is ready for that.
All right, and I think with that, that's going to bring us to the end of our show. So I am Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I am one of the hosts on PW Torch's PWT Talks NXT, and I also write the NXT Hits and Misses, which I try to put up shortly after NXT goes off the air on Tuesday nights. Kevin, who are you?
Well, I am Kevin Catani. You can find me all over the Twitterverse at KP Catani. I am the, I don't even know how would you describe me? I am the quintessential bullpen PW Torch talent. I am always warm. The left arm is always ready to go. And I so enjoy every time I'm asked to be here, and it's an honor. So thank you, Nate. But follow me on Twitter if you want. I love talking wrestling, Magic the Gathering, emotional intelligence. We cover it all on my Twitter world. And again, yeah, thanks for having me. And I look forward to the next time, and I look forward to the next few weeks in wrestling coming up here.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's going to be a good build to SummerSlam. Get the Great American Bash coming up. There's a lot of good things, a lot of good things in the future. But yeah, Kevin, thank you very much for sitting in and filling in with me for Greg tonight. Greg should be back next week for Wrestling Night in America. So with that, we will talk with you then. Take care.